Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the possibility of frontline medical staff in Lake County getting the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine before the end of the year. Rebecca Thiel reports on the devastating effects to a community when a coal plant closes. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Ty Warner, the executive director of the Northwestern Indiana Planning Commission. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Frontline medical staff at Munster's Community Hospital could receive their first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine before the year is out. The Indiana Department of Health previously revealed Community Hospital and four others in the state have been selected as pilot COVID-19 immunization sites for Hoosier healthcare workers who treat COVID-19 patients. Following the initial vaccine distribution to the five pilot hospitals, another 50 hospitals across the state have volunteered to administer the vaccine to healthcare workers in their communities. The Times reports, in addition, the state is working with Walgreens and CVS drugstores to organize and provide COVID-19 immunizations to residents and employees of nursing homes and other long-term care facilities before the vaccine is made available to the general public. According to the state health agency, there will be no charge for any person in Indiana to receive the vaccine, and no insurance deductible or copayment is required. Dr. Christina Box, the state health commissioner, said Indiana healthcare workers and eventually all Hoosiers need to know the first COVID-19 vaccines will be different than other immunizations because two doses are required within a 21 or 28 day period to reach maximum effectiveness. Dr. Box also adds that COVID-19 vaccine testing has determined the vaccine can produce side effects in some recipients, including fatigue, headache, and fever, which is considered normal. Box is, however, concerned at public opinion polls showing 4 in 10 Americans are uncertain about getting the COVID-19 vaccine when it is available. She goes on to say, even when vaccines are finally available to the public, getting the shot will not be the equivalent of a, quote, get-out-of-jail-free card. Box said, not only are both doses required for 95% effectiveness, but COVID-19 still will be a danger to others in the community until most of the population is vaccinated, a process that will take months to complete.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Valparaiso University has a new permanent president. The board of directors announced Wednesday that Jose Padilla will begin as president-elect on January 1st. He and interim president Colette Urwin-Knott will work together in the transition up to around March 1st. Padilla comes to VU from positions in the University of Colorado system. He's also served 15 years in senior leadership posts at DePaul University in Chicago, most recently as vice president, general counsel, and secretary. Board of Directors Chairman Frederick Kregel says Jose's deep and varied background in higher education make him ideally suited to lead Valparaiso University. He was chosen after an exhaustive search over more than 1 year that involved more than 100 candidates.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana casinos have a few new rules to follow after Governor Eric Holcomb's latest COVID-19 executive order. The regulations imposed by the Indiana Gaming Commission apply to casinos in counties labeled orange or red on the state's color-coded map that measures the risk of COVID spread. Casinos in orange counties have to create a designated area away from the gaming floor and any walking paths where people can eat, drink, and smoke while socially distanced. Otherwise, eating and drinking are prohibited anywhere else in the casino other than a restaurant, and mask wearing is required at all times. If a casino is in a red-colored county, it must also reduce its already limited capacity even further.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Nearly 4 million Hoosiers could be eligible for money from credit bureau Equifax after a 2017 data breach, but they have until December 16th to file a claim. Equifax's data breach from May to July of 2017 exposed Hoosiers' Social Security numbers, dates of birth, addresses, and in some cases, driver's license numbers and credit card information. Attorney General Curtis Hill opted not to join in a multi-state settlement with the company. Instead, he filed a separate lawsuit and secured more money for Indiana than the other states each got, more than $19 million. Hoosiers impacted by the data breach can file a claim for some of that money at IndianaEquifaxClaims.com. They must do so by December 16th. The money will be paid out after that deadline.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
When a coal plant shuts down, the loss of jobs and tax revenue can be devastating for the towns that host them. The state is grappling with how to help workers and local governments in Indiana with that transition. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, activists say people who are harmed the most by the pollution and climate impacts from these plants need to be part of the conversation, too.
It's not always easy to see how something like pollution can affect your health, but for Michigan City resident Don Brooks, it's pretty clear. He has COPD, which stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It makes it difficult to breathe and can be life-threatening. Brooks says he was pretty active when he was younger, but now he can get winded just going up the stairs.
There is no hurry up, you know. You get rushing, you run out of air.
People who live near things like coal plants, factories, and big cities are more likely to have heart and lung conditions like COPD. Brooks says for him, it could be other factors, like smoking. What he does know is that emissions from things like the NIPSCO coal plant impact his health right now. But residents like Brooks may breathe a little easier in 8 years. NIPSCO plans to close the Michigan City plant, remove its coal ash ponds, and get more than 60% of its energy from renewable sources. And it seems like Michigan City leaders are ready for a change, too.
How you doing? Hanging in there, doing all right.
Councilman Michael Mack represents residents in the city's West Side neighborhood. He says the plant has been an iconic part of Michigan City, but it's time to move forward.
I think everybody's ready for it. I don't think there's very many people that would be standing up for let's burn coal right now.
Unlike other towns in Indiana, the closure in Michigan City isn't going to hit quite as hard. The plant is smaller and is in a much bigger city with more industries. Some local leaders actually see the closure as an opportunity.
We have one of the best views in Lake Michigan sitting right on that area, over 50 acres. So why not take advantage of that?
That's Clarence Hulse with the Michigan City Economic Development Corporation. From where he's standing at Washington Park, the coal plant looks out of place next to the city's own small slice of the lakefront. Hulse says he could see some retail businesses or commercial offices where the plant is now.
I think it's a prime spot for people to live and work.
But activists worry that NIPSCO will still leave coal ash contamination behind, and it's possible that not everyone will benefit from this change. Ashley Williams is a co-founder of the group Just Transition Northwest Indiana. She says the people most harmed by pollution are often left out of these conversations, and that could lead to another polluter moving into the plant's place.
We want to see that really thorough open dialogue with the community, not a behind closed doors sort of backroom deal.
LaTanya Troutman is with the LaPorte County branch of the NAACP and another co-founder of the group. She says another concern is that other developments, like beachside resorts, could gentrify the area and exclude residents from the lakefront. Troutman says many people who live closest to the plant are lower-income residents and people of color.
We want the lakefront to be available to those residents, just like it's available to the residents who reside in Long Beach.
Troutman says the city needs to think about how people affected by pollution can be part of positive change going forward. Both Clarence Hulse and Michael Mack say the city has no plans to put an industrial building where the NIPSCO plant is now, and both want to keep the lakefront open to the public. Mack says we could see a struggle between private industries and community leaders in the future, but those competing interests just haven't shown up yet.
So we just have to be smart, we have to be aware, and we have to make our input known on what we want as this process continues to go forward.
Indiana is in the middle of developing a statewide energy plan. Environmental justice advocates say it's important that the people most harmed by coal pollution and its impacts on the climate get a seat at the table. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Ty Warner, the executive director of NERPC.
It's no doubt that the coronavirus pandemic has made its mark on Northwest Indiana. We've seen schools close. We've seen fewer workers on the trains and the buses to go to work, if they have jobs, unfortunately. Traffic congestion on the highways has declined, and there have been lots of changes in how we hold meetings when it comes to work and sometimes personal calls. And that is also being reflected in commerce here in Northwest Indiana, in particular in e-commerce. Well, the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Commission has taken time to study the COVID-19 impact on e-commerce. In fact, they've created a report about it, and let's find out more about that report. Ty Warner is Executive Director of NERPC, and he's joining us today to talk about it. Ty, thank you for being with us on Regionally Speaking.
Chris, great to be with you. Glad to be here. And thanks for talking about this topic. This is important for the future of our region.
Well, it's very important. And I know from the report, even though I just took a look at some of the basic details, the full report's on the website for NERPC, by the way, if anybody wants to check it out. But it talks about the major changes, the shifts in commerce that we have seen, some rather dynamic shifts. Why don't you just break it out for us? Tell us where we've seen the big changes as a result of the pandemic and what impact it's had on all businesses in the region.
Absolutely. You know, it's always interesting when data backs up what your anecdotal experience is, and that's certainly the case now. And the timing with this report, we started this before the pandemic. E-commerce was already a big part of the shift in the economy, which I think we all knew. But now with the pandemic upon us and you know the drastic decreases in travel and the way people are conducting business and their willingness to go out and all of the rest, even more timely and more important for the future of the region. So let me just start, first of all, by saying this all originated by our NWI 2050 document, which is our regional vision plan for the future of Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. And that is, we adopted that in 2019 and already identified the importance of e-commerce and how much the landscape was changing in the drastic increase in the amount of retail. Changes in retail trips, and that bore out by a household travel survey that we conducted, which many of your listeners may have received. This was randomly sent across Lakeport and LaPorte counties, and people responded to where they were going, all voluntary, of course. But that was pulled together in the aggregate and then analyzed. And boy, one of the things that jumped out at us right away was the difference in retail trips. Back in 2008, when we had last done this household travel survey, over 21% of retail trips were for shopping trips, retail, going to stores and whatnot. And then the results of the survey, which was largely in 2018, that had dropped to 9%. So 12% decrease just in 10 years of retail trips. And that just bears out, I think, everybody's experience, much more online, much more purchasing of things getting delivered right right to your door, coupled with the increase that we're seeing on the roadway that I think everyone sees when they're out and about, is the increase in, you know, Amazon Prime trucks, FedEx, UPS, even to the point where they're having to rent, you know, you see the budget and U-Haul, you know, rent a truck, so to speak, coming to deliver your packages because it's that difficult to keep up with demand. Well, that's during the pandemic. Even before that, between 2014 and 2018, truck traffic has already been drastically increasing, whereas overall, we measure, this gets a little technical, but we measure vehicle miles traveled for the region, and that has stayed somewhat flat between 2014 and 2018, a very, very minor increase. But truck traffic has definitely increased, and I think that's all a result of the way that we do shopping and the way that we do commerce.
Now, what do you all find at NERPC in putting together the report of the impact? Not only, as you mentioned, we have fewer trips made to the store over time. We have more vehicles on the road. These are delivery trucks, the ones that are marked and the ones that aren't marked, because a lot of these prime trucks are not marked as such, but they're still out there.
Right.
And what are you finding as far as the storefronts of the big box stores and brick and mortar stores? What's the impact all been on them right now?
Right. Well, I think a lot of your listeners have already experienced, you know, beloved restaurants, shopping opportunities, things that they had long thought would just be around forever, suddenly surprised to find out that they've needed to close their doors in some cases. And in other cases, some have been able to pivot in this circumstance and be able to adopt. And I just know, and I'm sure your listeners have similar experiences, when you just talk to some of these business owners, you know, some of them have really been creative about finding out how to survive in this particular climate and have adjusted. It's interesting when you talk to folks that have done this in a great deal of depth. You know, sometimes you hear the term retail apocalypse being used as if everything is completely on a downward spiral. And some of the folks that have really studied this very carefully, who are much more well-versed in the economics of this than I am, really kind of put a caution on using that phrase, because there is some thought out there, and it seems to be bearing out with other data, that the decline is probably looked at more in terms of a right-sizing than an actual just complete plummet of brick-and-mortar stores.
Right.
So as e-commerce has been available, that's helped to, you know, how do you put this? I don't want to sound like this is some kind of survival of the fittest, but in some way it has put the pressure on so that those that maybe were less solid, and I want to be careful here. I do not want to say that somebody who has not been able to survive in this climate has somehow done something wrong. That's not the message. But it's just been that there has been a decrease in retail that may be just getting to a level where it probably should have been at, rather than the overexpansion that we've seen in this country over a long period of time. So that is one definite way to look at that. But the upshot is that this new change in how we do commerce is here to stay. The amount of just employment growth in different sectors, 50% increase in warehousing and storage. So this all has ramifications for where we go with this. And even in the amount of warehousing as a part of our economy, we have a greater percentage of that than Indianapolis in our economy. Not to mention, we are still in relative proximity to Indianapolis, where the second largest FedEx hub is. So we're really well positioned with our transportation network. The same network that gives rise to calling us the Crossroads of America is the very thing that helps goods and delivery like this excel, and we're right in the heart of it, and well poised to, I think, take advantage of what the future may hold.
We're talking with Ty Warner. He's the executive director of the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission. NERPC has put out a new report entitled "E-commerce in Northwest Indiana." You can check it out on their website. And I know there's some recommendations. I'd like to touch on those here in a minute, Ty, but tell us a little bit about some of the areas here in Lake Porter and LaPorte counties that you all have noted, that, as it says in the report, are uniquely positioned for growth. Tell us about those first.
Exactly. Well, we did a land use study, which is part of what we do. And I should just encapsulize for your listeners. NERPC is a council of governments. We are a unit of government, but we are not a layered of government. We are a body where all the 41 municipalities in Lake Porter and LaPorte counties come together on a regular basis to talk about things that are bigger than any one of them. And so part of that charge as a regional planning commission is to trends and try to project growth to meet our other important designation, which is a Metropolitan Planning Organization for federal transportation funds. So this all works together in how you plan out the future of our connectivity and mobility in the region. Mm-hmm. So as part of that data, we looked at locations that are most conducive to e-commerce and where that can function at the most efficient level based on the particular needs of what goes into e-commerce. And we looked at five different clusters around the region and tried to analyze what is the best performing in terms of connectivity, being able to take advantage of these locations for e-commerce. So what the report tries to do in amongst its recommendations is to lay out, here is how this region can best position itself to try to take advantage of this future trend.
I know that there are some recommendations that the report is putting out, and you can check out in more detail, that gives some ideas, at least, on how some organizations and businesses and all can try to adapt and deal with the changeover, as we're seeing a big change in e-commerce from the usual traditional visit to the store. What are some of these recommendations that the full report talks about?
Sure. Well, I think one of the biggest ones that is most exciting to think about because of the opportunity involved is, as we've seen declines in shopping malls and other retail businesses, there are some great examples of the way communities have adaptively reused some aging mall facilities and big box retail and whatnot for other uses, whether that's to, as the report highlights, the occasion where a whole big box facility was transformed into a really stunning public library facility, to another shopping mall that integrated a whole hospital healthcare facility as part of the mall. And I just saw the other day, a little closer to home, Fox Valley Mall in Aurora, Illinois, and a proposal for a mixed-use development to take advantage of transforming part of the anchors in that store to be mixed-use development, which means, you know, not only commercial but also residential and senior living facilities and a way to integrate that into and coexist with existing retail. Mm-hmm. So there's some exciting examples we can pull from for adaptively reusing some of the facilities that we're seeing a shift in their use. And then some of the other recommendations in the report that I think are really helpful for us to think about in the future for a host of reasons, but this is one of them, is the importance of the curb. And that sounds so basic to just talk about the curb, but especially when you're talking about your downtown areas or areas that are a bit more congested, as we move not only into more of an e-commerce environment, but as autonomous vehicles are on the horizon and that technology just keeps getting further and further along, the ability to transfer not only goods, but people right in front of businesses and locations becomes all the more important. So you may not have thought so much about the space in front of your store previously, but now in the midst of the pandemic, when so many restaurants are doing, you know, curbside service, and you're seeing locations that are marked, you know, keep this free for takeout only or curbside service only,
right,
so that the curb stays free. Already we're getting to that point where we're paying a lot more attention to what happens right on the street, right in front of the business. And that's only going to get more important as you have more and more deliveries happening and needs to be able to be efficient so that it doesn't block traffic to be able to release their goods and move on to, as I mentioned, autonomous vehicles when, again, I'm looking pretty far out, but that's what
yeah.
we try to do.
Well, you have to do that, that now.
Absolutely. And that picture is one of, you know, for many thinking that maybe a shared option, much like, you know, ride hailing, things like Uber and Lyft and all that, where the autonomous vehicle comes, picks you up on demand, but you don't necessarily own it. But even if you do, the idea is that it comes and picks you up where you are. And again, all the more important to manage that curb space for efficient delivery. And like I said, not just packages that you order off of online retail, but on down the road, potentially yourself as you travel here and there and want the vehicle to drop you
wow.
off in front of a particular business.
Well, it sounds like, too, that it's something that in the report is going to be something that public officials here in Northwest Indiana should take a look at, because it may involve some serious changes in their tax revenue status.
It could. And while I don't want to put myself as being qualified to speak too much on that particular shifting landscape there, obviously there's some changes in use. And when you have changes in use, you have changes in revenue. And so I think it would behoove all of our communities to look carefully at what the future holds and try to adapt accordingly, which we say all the time on a bigger scale anyway. But particularly with this report, this brings it a little bit. Our plan goes out to the year 2050 that I mentioned, NWI 2050. Well, this is in the next, few years we're talking about. So this is the here and now, and I think communities would do well to try to do what they can to pivot their communities to take advantage of that future. And NERPC is here to help with this. That's what we do.
Thank you for this great information. And here again, the full report, e-commerce in Northwest Indiana, is on the NERPC website, NERPC.org. And you can find out all the details if you'd like to dig into it deeper. Ty Werner is the executive director for NERPC. And thank you very much for being with us today and giving us this executive summary of the report. It's a great report to take a look at. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate being on.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.